나왔어요.
골 뺐어요.
최세조 골 하루치입니다.
반대 손흥민! 손흥민!
Welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller. I am here with James Lewis of Manchester City fandom and Dr. Pete of Tottenham fandom. We are talking about the World Cup in 2018 in Russia, the group stages, the drama, the VAR, the yellow card, the penalty kicks, the own goals, all of it. Huge matches coming across the board now as the final matches of the group stage are being decided. The bracket is being filled out. We have stars falling. We have underdogs rising. We have goals. We have own goals. We have late goals. And we have goalkeepers running past midfield all the way to the other team's box. Gentlemen, most importantly of all, the biggest shock of the World Cup so far, we have Germany 0, South Korea 2. Headline on this one, Germany unprepared in Russia.
Yeah, that sums up their entire trip. I agree with your headline. They were sleepwalking through this game like they slept, like they were sleepwalking through the entire tournament up to this point. And I said during the Sweden game that they didn't deserve that Toni Kroos effort, which was a magnificent goal.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not the deserved result out of that game. And the South Koreans said it right here with a scintillating 2-0 victory.
I thought this was just an absolute abysmal performance from Germany. And I think that everyone, ourselves included, gave them too much credit just based on their badge. And figured they would show up just like they have over the last 60 years and march through the group stage without a problem. But the champion's curse, Thomas, is alive and well. And you could see from this squad that the temptation to keep the guys that got you the win in the last World Cup is just a natural tendency. And that was pretty clear and may have been part of what made them decide to leave Sané at home. But when you're playing in four-year cycles, you just have to have more turnover than the German squad had. And it was very clear that this was the worst striking force that they have ever had, at least in any games that I've ever seen Germany play.
I'm happy that they left Sané at home because I'm glad he was spared from the embarrassment that this squad has caused the entire nation of Germany.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if I'm a City fan, which you are, I mean, you have Leroy Sané sitting at home enjoying his vacation, and he actually gained value because every pundit I've heard is talking about Leroy Sané. They're a little late on the boat here because I think we talked about it like 3 weeks ago.
We were calling this from the beginning.
But I agree completely with both of what you're saying. And Pete, I think that Timo Werner, the forward, is going to go down as the worst German forward in World Cup history.
Trash.
I think you can absolutely say that, and you can say it as the strike force up top for them in general, but Timo Werner was absolute hot garbage in the World Cup, and he should be ashamed of himself, and I would be shocked if you saw him at all on the roster for the next World Cup. And Germany just didn't develop enough young players to augment what they had at the last World Cup, and they look like the slowest team in the universe.
On the counter, holy hell. On the counter, they got absolutely worked. Watching Mats Hummels and Sule try to get back for the counter, it was ridiculous. In the Mexico game, they got exposed the same way. Sweden doesn't have quite as much speed, so it wasn't as bad. But South Korea, I mean, they could have scored 5 goals in this one, for one thing. And for another, you know, we're talking about Timo Werner. So you have Timo Werner playing at your 9, and he's a kind of striker that likes to get behind and score goals. He had 13 goals in the Bundesliga this year. 13. He does not play for Bayern Munich. You take a look at their team, and where is their player with the most World Cup goals, who has 10 in World Cup history and is 28 years old, 5 at the last 2 World Cups? He is at a deep-lying right midfield role. That's Thomas Muller. And James, I just don't understand how you take a guy who finds goals in the World Cup, plays like a cold-blooded World Cup striker, move him out to the right, and put a player in who is so who has a lack of accomplishment.
What compounds the problem is that it seems like Muller would fit the way that, Germany was trying to move into the final third, because they're just kind of they're working it up very slowly. They're playing possession. Werner doesn't have space to run in behind anybody. So why even bring him? Mario Gomez at that point is a better option. And all he really offers is danger from set pieces. But Muller offers that as well. And he can help you out in open play. And I think he definitely should have been playing up top or thereabouts and completely wasted on the right. Completely wasted.
Yeah, I think it was just one of the decisions that Lowe got completely wrong going to the World Cup. We talked about Sané, Muller's positioning, his subs coming in, who he left on the bench for this game. I mean, you could just go through the entire list. And to me, you know, 4 years ago, plus a couple of weeks, he was on top of the world. He was a genius. German football was at the forefront. And all it takes is 4 years and some complacency. And now everybody's calling for his head. And this was the worst performance that Germany's had, I think, since 1938, they were saying, which I think Adolf Hitler might have been the coach on that squad.
Yeah, I mean, you joke, but I mean, that was a really bad time for them. And I don't really think you can compare teams from that wide of a distance, especially how different the setup of national teams was way back then. And I think you'd have to look for, you know, past 54-50 era kind of place. And this is the worst Germany's ever finished. And I don't know a lot about the teams in the 50s. A little bit about the teams in the 60s, more in the 70s, but they started becoming a machine. And honestly, one of the things about Germany is that even when they didn't have the strongest teams, you know, the 0-2 team ended up in the final, but they weren't really heavily lauded going into that tournament. And the 0-6 team is the same kind of thing. I mean, they're not heavily lauded in those tournaments. In this tournament, they are heavily favored to win the tournament because of how well they had done in the last World Cup. But you have to say that this is the biggest disappointment for me in the eyeball test, which is watching a team just underperform by such a wide margin, James, to see them just, I mean, everybody gets on Mesut Ozil for having no heart, and I don't think you can put anything on him because the rest of his team played worse than him and looked worse than him, unmotivated and uninspired.
They just came in like they felt like they were entitled to waltz through the group stage. The only guy I saw angry out on the field was Muller.
Yeah.
He was just in no place to affect the game whatsoever. So he wasn't able to do anything about it. It was just complete arrogance from this German side.
Pete, have you ever seen a team with their life on the line in a elimination game against an underperforming weaker opponent play so poorly and with so little fight?
I can't remember the last time I've seen a team play that poorly with their tournament life at stake. And the kicker is that it's not like they were playing a team that was packing it in and organized and just trying to fend out a draw in the early stage of the tournament. This was a South Korea team who was going for it. They had essentially nothing to lose. They wanted to win. Their back was wide open. Even at the end of the game, they were not trying to grind it out for a draw. They were trying to win. And that makes it even worse for me. And there's just absolutely no urgency whatsoever.
No urgency. I hated that. I can't believe that they weren't sprinting forward. They're not showing any emotion. And I understand the Germans aren't known for showing emotion, but no kind of energy at the end of the game. And I have never seen a team miss so many opportunities. Let me get into some stats for you guys. The Germans took 72 shots in 3 matches, which is 15 more than any other team in the tournament. They created 57 chances, which is 16 more than anyone else in the tournament. Again, that's ridiculous. And for reference, Iran created 10 chances in 3 matches. So you understand how far above other teams the Germans were in those two areas of the game. And yet they scored 2 goals, one on a deflection off Royce's knee, and the other one off a dead ball. Amazing to me. Amazing. They also averaged just 8.7 completed dribbles per game, which is just a shade more than Iran and half of what Brazil did. If there's not a time to be missing Leroy Sané, that to me speaks volumes, James.
Yeah, you described exactly what Leroy Sané would bring to the side, and it was just that attacking impetus that would move you from midfield or defense into attack really quickly and catch a lot of teams by surprise. They didn't have that. They just walked up the field most times that they had the ball because they're slow and looking lazy and out of touch.
In the 70th minute of all three of those games, all of us were thinking, okay, it's time to bring on Leroy Sané.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. He's at home. Nope. Let's bring in Brandt.
Leroy Sané's played FIFA. Leroy Sané's played FIFA.
And then as Julian Brandt comes in, the commentators are like, Julian Brandt's had a great tournament so far. Almost scored twice.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
He did hit the post in this one, but honestly, to me, that was just a microcosm of Germany. They had no real cold-blooded strike force. Mario Gomez had 9 goals in the Bundesliga this year. Like, they don't have anybody who can score goals. I know Thomas Müller had a down year for Bayern and was all over the map in terms of where he was playing. But, I mean, the guy can find spots and score goals, has played in 2 World Cups, has won a World Cup, has won the Champions League, has scored in deep Champions League runs, and has played well. Compared to Timo Werner, who actually played well as a left wing because he was the only guy that composed the dribbling stats that we were talking about earlier, that 8.7 dribbles, that was all Timo Werner coming from the left. That was the strongest he played in this tournament. And you have to say that, I mean, Leroy Sané advances all of that. And I was looking back at the comments made by Le after he cut Leroy Sané, and he said that he struggled to gel with his teammates, and he struggled to find the German tactics. And I just had to, I mean, to me, that's really simple. You don't have the tactics to
utilize that weapon.
That's correct.
And you're saying, and you're saying Timo Werner had an okay game, but, and he was doing those dribbles. But then what happened at the end of those dribbles? He shot into a defender, crossed to no one. When a cross did, not his, but when a cross did connect, I mean, Hummels had 2 wide open headers that he put over.
At least.
2 that were wide open 6 yards in front of the goal. Mario Gomez had a header, Goretzka had a header that were, and they were wide open and on target, but right at the keeper.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy. And I think the stat that to me highlights it is they didn't have problems creating chances. I mean, they 16 more than any other team in the tournament.
It's incredible.
But going back to how weak this strike force is and how much they needed, one, they needed a goal scorer, which they had in Müller, who's out on the right wing. And 2, they needed a dynamic threat, which they should have had in Sané, but they left him at home.
I mean, Müller didn't even start this game.
Yeah.
He came in the 65th minute. And for a team with the conversion rate that we were just discussing in how they convert their shots to goals, I mean, you have no goals from open play, really. I guess that Royce goal sort of counts. Looking forward to their strike force, you have to say that they're in trouble. You know, they don't have any striker right now, Pete.
Well, you know, they'll quickly reload and somebody will come up in the ranks. But I think Sané will be huge for them going forward. I think I was talking to James about it, that they'll likely build the next World Cup squad around him. Because honestly, he's the most talented guy that I've seen just by the eyeball test on that squad over the past year. I mean, Toni Kroos is right there. Maybe he's a little bit better, but Sané is right there. And in terms of a guy that can bring you the dynamic you need to win the World Cup, I think he was absolutely critical. And we did the preview of the German group before they cut Sané, and you and I spent 10 minutes talking about how much of an impact he would have, either as the best super sub in the tournament, and we made a strong argument that he should actually be starting. So when he was cut, we were just floored, even before the group stage started. So in my opinion, the Germans got what they deserved. They were complacent. They were arrogant. And when that happens in sports, you're going to pay the price.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
So let me just end the conversation here with this match. James, I want to know who you hold accountable, who you think is responsible for the German collapse.
It's Lowe. It's him all the way.
The manager, Jurgen Löw.
Not a question. I can't believe that he wasn't... One, I can't believe he didn't resign immediately.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, not only did the German FA come out and say, no, he's our guy, they're like, no, we pushed for a contract extension and we're still going ahead with it because this is the guy to lead the transition into the new era for German football. It's like they must be high.
Yeah, I thought that was absurd as well. And you were just talking about Sané, Pete. We've been talking about Sané, but if Jurgi Löw is going to be the manager for the next four-year cycle, then I guess Sané's role is set already.
Yeah.
No, I think that Sané will be heavily involved even with Löw coming in. I think Löw at this point, and you'll see him come out and say it eventually, saying it was a mistake not to bring him. But
No, he won't.
Yes, he will. I bet he will.
I don't think so.
I think he will, but either way, I think Sané is going to be a huge part of the squad no matter what. I mean, he's already forced his way on there. He just needs some more caps on the German squad to show that at the national level he's going to make a huge impact. But I was a little bit more torn. You know, initially I was like, someone's head's got to roll. It's got to be Löw's. I think this tournament was his fault. That being said, he has been in charge for a long time. There is something to be said for continuity. I think that he could come up with some fresh ideas and learn from their mistakes. But overall, when you have a loss like this, the worst in your history, someone has to be held accountable and someone's head has to roll. And it really should be his, because who else is going to pay for this?
I mean, move him up to a director of football level or whatever like that. Let him oversee the program if you like him so much. But you need fresh ideas in. And a guy coming off winning the World Cup to finishing last in the group of Sweden, Mexico, and South Korea is not, to me, not the person you want to be bringing up, like, day-to-day working with the next batch of German stars that are going to be playing on the national team.
I agree. I think that the reason that he has to go is because if your team shows up to all three matches with no motivation, especially the third one, if you can't motivate your team to beat a South Korea team that was ranked 60th in the world. I don't put a lot in FIFA rankings, but we're talking about a team that has 60 teams in front of them, or 59 teams in front of them, and is coming out of a weak Asia group, really only has one threat, and is just a struggle all around for South Korea. To not see Germany play with real fire, and to see them losing 50-50 balls to a team that's already been eliminated from the tournament, to me, that speaks volumes of a manager that has lost the locker room. All right, so we will move on to the next match here. Dr. Pete, we have Argentina 2, Nigeria 1. My headline for this one would be, Messi's teammates finally win a game.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head going into the tournament, and everybody wants to say the team will go as far as Messi takes them, and he had a absolutely phenomenal first goal. The touches
before
his strike were Dennis Bergkamp-esque.
I can play that if you want me to.
I mean, absolutely brilliant touches from somebody who's obviously the best player in the world. That's for Ken.
thank you. Preach.
No, but great goal from Messi. And Rojo, to have that finish after we've been watching player after player crap their pants in front of the goal. Oh, yeah. And that may have been Rojo's first shot of the tournament. I'd have to go back and look.
5 minutes before that, Higuain has his chance that he completely skies over the box. And you have a left-footed defender taking a right-footed volley out of the air and planting it in the goal.
What a finish, Pete. What a finish.
I mean, absolutely just brilliant, locked in, smooth as silk. I mean, it was just a lovely finish. And it was summed up, you know, Messi jumped on his back, and he was absolutely – Rojo just carried them through the next round. It was superb, and I think that is probably going to be the highlight of Rojo's career.
There was like a press snippet, like a quote from him where he just said – at halftime, coming back out on the field, Messi told the team, he was like, all right, you guys have got to start scoring some goals too, so just shoot. And he was like, so I saw the ball coming and I shot it.
That's definitely oversimplifying it, but Pete, you made a great point when the goal is scored, that Rojo just comes flying forward, just basically stays with the play the whole way and comes in and finishes the ball. Like, Moses wasn't expecting it. You watch Moses on the play, Victor Moses, the Nigerian defender. Marcus Rojo is a center back, and Moses didn't know whether or not to track him, and Rojo just busts straight through and comes in and finishes the ball that Higuain can't. So let's start at the beginning of this game. I mean, we already punched through it a little bit. In the national anthem, guys, I watched this one pretty closely to see if, Leo Messi was going to have a panic attack again during this one. And he looked much better. He looked stronger. And he looked like he had gone to the manager and said, I don't give two shits about your tactics. What I'm going to do is I'm going to drop deep. You're going to give me the ball 5,000 times wherever I have to be on the field, and I am going to win this match. And that's what he did for about 80 minutes, drop back up until, the end of the game there. He was a huge part of it, destroyed Nigeria, just coming from deep and refusing to sit in just that sedimentary way that he was in the previous match. Lionel Messi absolutely deserved his goal in this one, brought that touchdown that you're talking about, Pete, in the 14th minute. And at that point, you knew that Argentina was going to get through.
Yeah, I think one thing that we need to note here is that from the beginning of this game, the rest of his teammates looked up for it. They looked like they wanted to win. And that ball over the top from Ever Banega to Messi for that first goal, that is a brilliant pass. And that's something that we haven't seen the other Argentinian players making plays like that. Mm-hmm. And you got to wonder if it goes back to, like you were saying, basically the team telling Sampaoli, look, we don't care what you say. We're going to pick the team. We're going to pick the tactics, and we're going to play our hearts out because this is it. At one point later in the match, you actually can see the coach asking Messi if he should sub Aguero in. And Messi's like, yeah, dude. Yeah.
Give it.
And then, 10 seconds later, Aguero's coming in. It's like, I think it speaks volumes. I think it brings to light or clarifies that there really are tactical issues that they've had trying to work with this coach. I don't know if it was a camp divided. Some players wanted to follow the tactics. Other players didn't. I know there was a fight when they were trying to work out what to do. And in the end, they got what they needed, and it was a great game, honestly.
It really was. Before we get into anything else, we started this conversation out by saying that Messi's teammates actually came through in the clutch here. Pete, Mascherano pulls down a player on a corner kick and does everything he can to lose the game for Argentina in this one. As Nigeria scores a penalty kick in the 51st minute.
One of the worst defensive performances in the World Cup so far, which is really, really saying something.
You've been harping on that. There's been so much bad defense.
But he was absolutely atrocious. And I think most of the rest of the Argentina team picked it up, played much better. But he was god-awful.
The other players are probably looking at him and they're thinking to themselves, oh my God, I've got to play better because this is what we have.
I mean, the reason that Mascherano is on the field is that they just have not developed any younger players to replace him. I mean, he is ancient for 36. A squad of Argentina's stature. And so I was looking up, or I read an article that between 1995 and 2007, they won the under-20 World Cup on five separate occasions.
Wow.
So just an incredible team. Mm-hmm. Since 2007, they've won no Youth World Cups. So they just have not developed the younger players in their system. For whatever reason, there are flaws in that system, and they've paid for it. And they've surrounded Messi and some talented players up top with guys who are replacement-level players. And Mascherano, at this point in his career, is a replacement level player.
Or below. I mean, if you're talking about a guy who picked up a yellow card and cost you a goal. Also, throughout the game, throwing in borderline reckless tackles that had to be inch perfect for a guy who has lost at least a step, maybe more. Always on the edge of a red card for me.
In this same game, almost played in a Nigerian striker.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Terrible pass back. He then came barreling back. I've never seen him run so fast, in fact, and a sliding tackle that, like you said, had to be inch perfect because he also took the player out. Yeah. Iheanacho running through on goal, and luckily got the ball to avert a disaster that he himself had created. It, just like this has been a woeful tournament for him. But Pete, you're exactly right. They have no other players that can play that role at any kind of high level.
No.
And he is just done. I think you like to have more experienced players there for their tactical experience and thinking they can keep a calm head. I mean, Mexico is carrying Rafa Marquez. he's 42. I don't know how old that mark is.
At least. It's the seventh World Cup.
Yeah. No, he's been to five, I think.
I don't know. But I think it is five. Is it five?
It's five.
He's our Kobe Jones, man. But you need someone to come in and get elbowed in the face to get that red card.
Yeah.
But he's changed his game. Where he used to be that guy getting the red card, he's still a dirty player. Yeah, but he's not ruining or trying to ruin Mexico's chances with stupid play like Mascherano is. And I don't know if Mascherano is still chasing the glory days and thinking he can do things that he can't. Maybe his mind hasn't caught up to his body yet.
Yeah,
but
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, but he's got to change. He's got to watch some game film and change something up, because they are through to the next round by the grace of God.
And France is licking their chops.
Oh yeah, and yeah, they haven't been great either. But they're gonna tear this Argentinian team apart if they don't figure their stuff out.
Their shistuff. Yeah. All right, so Argentina is through. I want to end this conversation with you, Dr. Pete, with some medical advice, if you will. Can you possibly give me any kind of hint as to what happened to Diego Maradona during this game?
I think I texted you and said, I'm worried about Diego Maradona going into a diabetic crisis.
Yes.
Because he looked like he had passed out in the stands for a little while, and fortunately it wasn't a diabetic crisis, but there was a little bit of a blood pressure issue, and I think he was a little bit dizzy. You can blame the middle fingers on that. If you watch carefully, sure. I mean, he is perilously close to falling out of the stands, and what a hell of a way that would have been to go out for him.
Oh, sure.
Because I pretty much guarantee you he's not surviving in the next World Cup. Based on all the risk factors that he has for a large heart attack.
I thought somebody said he had been partaking in too much white wine. I thought they might have misquoted it as white lines, but I think it's white wine.
Yeah. I heard some things come out of his camp. They said Diego is okay. There was actually no medical crisis during the game. I'm like, there was a medical crisis there I on multiple levels. I'm not a doctor, but when his eyes rolled back after the Rojo goal, like I was really, really worried. And then when he was flipping off the cameras, and that's on the FIFA World Cup, the television squad that feeds Fox the feeds there. I mean, if you're going to keep a camera on him, he's going to do something like that. And he knows the camera's on him, and he flips off the five Nigeria fans that were there. Like that seemed extreme, but it is Diego Maradona, and he is an extreme character.
I like the multiple cuts to him, like, passed out. He's just sitting there, so like, head back. It didn't even look like he was breathing at multiple points, but there's like five or six shots where they just cut to him, Diego Maradona, and he's just, oh.
Yeah, he wasn't looking good. There is a still shot, if you get a chance. It's behind him flipping off the Nigerian fans, and it's a woman that sits behind him that I imagine is related to him in some capacity, giving him that look that we've all gotten from our significant others when we partake in too much fun. And it just says, I can't believe I'm with this guy on one level or another, and we've all seen it. Yeah, I can commiserate there. But Argentina is through 2-1. Really exciting game here. You guys referenced Rafa Marquez. We will move to the Mexico game, as it brings me a lot of glee on one level, to say Sweden 3, Mexico 0. Mexicans flogged in Russia as Sweden runs riot, but make it through anyways.
A little bit of a run on there, but
that's a really long headline.
Yeah, it's a large print paper. Mexico were just totally clueless in this game.
Boy, were they exposed.
Did they think that they had it all wrapped up and they could just take it really easy? I think by the end of the game, they were watching the big screen.
Absolutely.
The other game, just hoping that Germany didn't score. Luckily for them, they're the only team more inept than Mexico, it seems, at this point.
Yeah, I think this is the Mexican squad that we know and love doing stupid stuff and not showing up for the game. And ironically, they got eviscerated by the counterattack, which they live by. And the thing about Mexico is, you know, the Germany win was huge for them, but that's just one game in the group stages. And they were very close to getting knocked out of this one. If that Germany ball that hit the post had gone in, they're going home. their earliest exit in, you know, about 20 years. So, yeah. You can celebrate your Germany victory a week after you arrived at the World Cup by flying home.
They were sloppy against South Korea, too. I mean, they definitely got out ahead early in that game, but you could see the signs that they just were not focusing the way they focused against Germany. And I think it's that kind of, I think they have the same kind of thing that the U.S. does, where we can play up to our opposition, but we can also play down to our opposition as well.
That's exactly what I think of Mexico. They play up or they play down. In this one, I mean, they got smashed, and it wasn't really that close. I mean, there were a couple penalty shouts that probably could have been called. Chicharito dribbling out of his own box, using his arm to guide the ball. I thought that was a penalty kick. You know, I'm biased. We're United States fans. They're our rival, and we want them to lose. And I thought, you know, maybe that's the reason I thought it was such a clear-cut penalty, and I kind of let it go after that. But it's not like Mexico deserved any more than what they got. I mean, Sweden played exceptionally well. They win the group here, and Mexico almost went out despite 6 points.
Because they could not find a way to get a draw in this one, and Mexico is not built to grind out a draw.
Yeah, I agree.
And they couldn't find a way to do it. They sort of looked like they didn't know what to do coming out of this one. They're like, all right, we're at the top of the group. All we need to do is get the draw. We'll be the top seed. But they couldn't get that done. And once the Sweden train started rolling, that was it. And now, because of that, you're going to go face Brazil when Sweden's playing Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And then the winner of the England-Belgium group. So Sweden's got a terrific draw. I mean, they could win a couple of games and make it to the semifinals, whereas Mexico is going to be heavy underdogs in that Brazil game.
Yeah, Sweden here scores a goal in the 50th minute, smashes it past Ochoa, who, by the way, quietly to me, might have been the best goalie in the group stages. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I kind of left him off. He had a terrific game early. He's the only reason they didn't lose by six. He had a spectacular game early, again in a World Cup, a good showing for Ochoa. 62nd minute, we have a Hector Moreno yellow card and penalty kick. Moreno will miss the Brazil match. That's their center back, one of their best defensive players, a big miss for Mexico. They're really going to pay for that, I think.
Oh, my God. If they have to start Rafa Marquez in center of defense against Brazil.
You don't like that matchup?
I think I'd set the over-under on penalty kicks conceded at 2 on that one.
He won't be moving. He'll be standing in place. The ball will just be going past him one way and then pass him back the other way. He'll just spend the entire game turning around in a circle.
Doesn't even get a chance to foul people. That's probably true.
Just sticking his leg out to kick people as they run by.
They get a penalty. Sweden gets a penalty here and converts it in grand fashion. 2-0 from Grandqvist. And at that point, Mexico, the announcers here, which were both Mexico fans, I was incorrect last week saying that Fernando Fiore was the Mexican fan. It's actually Jorge Perez Navarro, who's the extremely obnoxious Mexican commentator. I think that out of all the commentators we have at Fox in the American feed, that he is the worst. And
that's,
I feel
that's saying something.
Yeah,
I really think so.
JP Telecamera is on this, isn't he?
Who's that?
Is JP Delacamera in these American feeds?
Yeah, yes. He's on this. He actually got to go to Russia with Tony Meola. That's
him and Tony, the A team. I was going to say, those two have never been classified as the A team ever before.
No.
In their lives.
No. Absolutely brutal here. And this.
I miss the NBC guys in the Premier League so much.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you watch this tournament and you just yearn for them.
So I don't know about you guys, but listening to Jorge Perez Navarro on these Mexican feeds is just absolutely brutal. I misspoke last week when I said it was Fernando Fiore. I think he's actually Argentinian, and he's actually in the studio. It's Jorge Perez Navarro that is the nightmare that does the Mexican games in English. And, you know, to Mariano Trujillo, that's the his co-commentator, to his credit, he never agrees with anything Jorge says. He goes against him the whole time. And you can just tell that he's miserable being in the same booth. James, is this the most obnoxious thing you've ever heard in your life?
It's like a vaudeville act. You have the straight man, and then you have the joker. I kind of like his unbridled optimism in a way. Of course, I'm joking. It's really annoying. And I mute the feed when I'm watching that game.
Yeah, let's get into a side conversation here about the commentators. Some of you in other countries don't get the same feeds as us, and you're lucky for that. We have some pretty rough commentators. In general, when the Prem is broadcasted in the United States, we get a terrific group by NBC where they actually employ mostly British commentators, pretty much all British commentators, or Scottish, and they're exceptional. In this World Cup, Fox is trying to make a statement by having American commentators do almost all the matches, except for the Mexican commentators, and then we also have Derek Ray. But the problem is, for every Derek Ray, there is a Stu Holden. You know what I mean? I don't know about you guys, but when Stu Holden is breaking down the match, like in like a high-pitched, kind of whiny voice, I struggle to really like keep focus on the match.
Yeah, I've just got to have English commentators break the match down for me. It just doesn't do it for me for American commentators, and there's just very few American commentators who you feel like they understand the game more than you do. And you're watching with these commentators talking about what's going on in the field, and it just doesn't match up with what you're watching and breaking down in your own mind. And it's every game. It's not just, you know, one set of commentators, and it's terrible. I've been looking for radio feeds to play while I'm watching the video feed because it's so bad.
Now, hold on, guys, because you may or may not know that we do have JP Della Camera on this team. JP Della Camera, named as the 8th best soccer commentator in the business by World Soccer Talk in 2016.
Is that American commentator? Because that's not really that good.
No, best overall.
No. Like, I listen to BBC feeds, and all of their commentators are better. The NBC feeds are miles better. ESPN went with all British commentators for their feeds in 2014. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I'll just say one final comment. I like what Fox has done in the studio. I like Ian Wright being there. I like the English women's national team star, Kelly Smith, I think her name is. Yeah, Kelly Smith. I think she adds a lot to the booth. Goose Hiddink, Martin O'Neill was on there for a little while, and then he got kind of in a scrap with Rob Stone over language, which was incredible. They were arguing over the usage of a word, and Rob Stone said, "Well, you'll probably not be back again." and Martin O'Neill has not been back since, which is
no one's seen Martin O'Neill.
Just worth laughing at. Clarence Seedorf is there. Just a lot of good stuff happening in the studio. Well, anyway, so we'll move on to actual soccer here. We'll move to Brazil 2, Serbia 0. And for this one, Brazil starting to roll.
Yeah, this was their first back-to-back victories since 2010, which seems pretty unbelievable, at least in the World Cup. And they're starting to get their feet underneath them, starting to string the passes together. I like how solid their back line seems to be. They were struggling a little bit in the first 15 minutes of the second half. They brought Fernandinho on. I thought he stabilized things back there for them, and they obviously took over the game after that. But I think this is a pretty well-balanced Brazil squad. I think Coutinho has just been incredible. You know, all the focus is on Neymar for media reasons, and I think it's a lot of hype, but Coutinho has shown his world class. It seems like everything is being generated through him, and they can ride him deep into this tournament.
Yeah, I agree. Coutinho looks like the most dynamic midfielder in the tournament right now. I mean, he's tracking back, he's bringing the ball forward, he's shooting from range, he's threading passes through. He's doing it all, and Pete's right. They can ride him a long, long way, especially when they have pretty balanced talent all across the field. I like to look at this Brazil team in perspective compared to the German team, because this is a Brazilian team that's full of talent, full of stars, but they're playing like adults. Even though they're not really fluid with each other yet, they're getting there. At the end of the day, they're all working hard, and they're all trying to execute on the same game plan. So they lack the fluidity, they're getting there, but they're playing like adults, and they're taking responsibility for the burden of winning.
Yeah, a lot of people going into this World Cup were talking about revenge for the 7-1 beating they received in 2014 against Germany. And, you know, we scoffed at that. I don't believe in any kind of revenge. They're not playing against Germany. And even if they were, they'd be playing to win 1-0. They wouldn't be playing to win 7-1. So that is forgotten. It's a part of World Cup lore, but not for this team. That's a real testament to what Tite has done for them. And I would say that they're not playing like a team with a big burden on their back, with maybe the exception of Neymar, who seems to be straining a little bit under the pressure of being the best player of the World Cup, the expectation. But underneath him, like you said, I mean, Coutinho is thriving. And the other players, especially the midfielders, whoever they may be, Paulinho or Fernandinho or Casemiro, I think that they've been fantastic in this. And the fact that we haven't really talked about Brazil's defense is a testament to how well they're playing. In this one, it bears noting, in the 10th minute, Marcelo comes off for Felipe Luiz. We were told it was back spasms at the time. That's a big deal because Marcelo's a big part of how they attack going forward, but it didn't seem to make too much a difference in this one, as Paulinho comes from deep on a absolutely superb ball from Coutinho, runs through the back line, chipped over the top. Great finish by Paulinho as he tips it over the goalie's head on the run in the 36th minute, a deserved 1-0 scoreline there. And Dr. Pete, you'd have to say that poor Serbia was hanging in there, but just Brazil was really starting to gain momentum.
They showed their quality here, and Serbia has played relatively well throughout the tournament, but it was clear that they were outpaced in this game.
Pace is a great way to put it, outpaced.
And they just never got their footing other than about a 15-minute span when they look like they might be creeping back in there. But this was a professional victory, and a lot of the top seeds have not been able to come through with this up to this point in the tournament, and they ensured that they won the group. They are going to run into Mexico, which is a very winnable game, in the next round, so you should fully expect this team to make a deep run just like they have in tournaments past. And I agree with you. I don't think there's any revenge factor, but I do think that when you get your ass kicked in the last tournament on your home soil, that there is a level of focus that was not there before, kind of like I expect Germany to bounce back at the next tournament. So I think it's unlikely that they're going to suffer, you know, walloping in this tournament like they did in the last one.
The best revenge is living a good life.
Is that what you tell your ex-wife? All right, moving on. Thiago Silva scores in the 68th minute here with a towering header off of a corner kick to kind of put this game to bed. At that point, Serbia starts to push forward even more, even though they were pretty much eliminated there. And Brazil just keeps trying to feed Neymar. He just keeps shooting. Dr. Pete, I had $5 on Neymar to score in this match, and he just kept shooting, and it was not happening.
Yeah, I think you've won a few bets during this tournament. Which bet was your best bet so far, by the way?
Harry Kane to score a brace against Tunisia.
Good. Yeah. Excellent bet, Thomas.
Yeah, honestly, I've made little tiny bets, like $5 here and there, just to keep some of these matches interesting. But I'm even right now. I'm actually up $1.
There you go.
So I'm happy considering everything, and it's given me some things to watch for in the Saudi Arabia Egypt game.
You gotta let that dollar ride. Take it all away.
I might. I'm not gonna lie. I might. Anyway, so Brazil here rolls through. Neymar misses a lot of shots, but Brazil goes through. And James, my question for you to kind of tie everything up here is: do you think Brazil is the team that has looked the best out of the favorites so far at the World Cup?
Out of the favorites, I would say they look the most professional. They look like they have the pieces to roll through the whole tournament. The team in general that most impresses me is Croatia, however. I don't know if they were considered a top-tier favorite.
They were not.
But I think Croatia has impressed me the most and has got to be scary for any team in the tournament right now.
Great segue, James. Croatia 2, Iceland 1. Clinical Croatia sends home brave Iceland.
Yeah, Croatia sent out their B squad plus Modric, and they won this one without too much difficulty. They didn't lose any players to red cards or second yellow cards. They didn't suffer any injuries. thought they played Modric a little bit too long, but they absolutely dominated this group. And there were questions. I picked them to get knocked out of the tournament and not make it through the group stage. And a lot of other people did too. And they easily won this group. And they are going to be a force going forward. And I am licking my chops at a possible quarterfinal matchup with them in Spain.
I think any late tournament game with Croatia in it is going to be an excellent game to watch. I think they're very similar to Brazil in that they have good players front to back. They have an amazing midfield pairing in Rakitic and Modric. They can play with any team in this tournament, hands down. And if you're not on your game, I think I said the exact same thing. If you're not on your game when you're playing Croatia, then they're going to punish you.
I think that with Croatia, you have this very stable midfield anchored by Modric. You have a collective group that is playing beyond the chaos that was their FA was in going into this tournament. The background noise with Modric and his trial and whatever is behind them. They seem to be playing as a collective unit better than any other team in the tournament right now to me. And that makes a huge difference when you're moving forward. We'll see what happens with that. In this one, they score in the 53rd minute. Badej scores 1-0. Iceland in this one kind of got worked a little bit. I mean, they're a very well-organized team as well. But they had a lot of attempts on goal, 6 on target. Even with Croatia being with their second squad, you didn't think that Iceland was going to go ahead and grab this game by the horns like they could have. They did score a penalty goal in the 76th minute. Sigurdsson smashes it in, unlike the Nigeria game where he missed, and Perisic adds a late winner for Croatia. Croatia pushes through. You guys have said enough about how good Croatia has been in this one, and we'll get into their chances moving forward when we look ahead at the at what has happened in the bracket so far. But for now, we're going to move on from the Croatia game to a few games that were less meaningful. The Australia matchup here. Australia needed some help, but needed to beat Peru. Peru already eliminated. Australia loses here 2-0. And my headline for this one, James, Peru knocks out Australia with their last breath.
Peru already eliminated. Australia really a long shot to go through. I think Peru were playing for pride more than anything else. Not a bad team at all, and they were a little bit unlucky in some of their other games. You know, when it came down to it, Australia just did not have enough.
They didn't have a clinical finisher.
No.
And Cahill came on in this one, you know, and we talked about that in the build-up. We don't know the Australia team as well as we know a lot of other teams. And I gained a lot of respect for their playing style. We had said this before. They play, I mean, I guess like we would like our team to play, like the United States to play. They play with fight. And they play over their heads. I thought that Lecky was really good in this tournament. Mm-hmm. Jednak was really good in this tournament. Moy, I would have expected more from, but you know, he may have been getting singled out a little bit here. And I was a little bit disappointed because I thought Australia had good chances in this match, and Peru just kind of scored out of nowhere twice and ended World Cup hopes.
Yeah, I agree with James that Peru was a bit unlucky in the tournament, and I don't know why they didn't start Guerrero in the first game. I thought he was terrific when he was on the field, and they obviously missed that penalty very early on that could have changed the World Cup for them. I will say that this game was not terribly exciting. Australia, I was hoping that they would grit out a win the way they have in the past, but they really couldn't find the magic that they've had before, and I think that at the end of the day, these countries' supporters were much more exciting than the actual soccer that was played by their teams. I mean, what a showing by the Australian fans and the Peru fans. It was insane.
Oh, it was a ton of fun, man. I mean, for real. Australia, I really wanted them to go through. And like I said, their fight was really inspiring, but their finishing was not. In this matchup, they had 14 attempts and only 2 on target. Peru had 4 attempts and 3 on target, 2 of those going in the net. Just, I think that Australia is missing that clinical forward, but they have the fight, which is a big part of it. Can you imagine if you melded Australia's fight with Germany's talent? I mean, it would be no doubt that Germany would roll through, and that's a big part of why Germany didn't roll through. So we'll go to the next match here. I don't even know. I'm not even going to give a headline to this one. France 0, Denmark 0.
Two teams that might as well not have shown up for the game and just said, okay, we'll take first and second in the group. Yeah. And Denmark's coach pretty much said that after the game, which usually they just beat around the bush and say, oh, no, we were trying. We really wanted to win, blah, blah, blah. But they were more than happy to advance to the next round. And they're playing Sweden in the next round, which they could easily win that game. So it's hard to fault them for that. And France just hasn't looked as dynamic as we thought they would look. And what a great test for them in the round of 16 playing Argentina. Can't wait for that one.
It's going to be a big one for them. I think this game for France was to see what some of their alternate players, I mean, I don't want to call them backups, but I guess squad players, how they could adapt. Thomas Lemar was on. I thought he was terrible. Misplacing passes, just shooting.
It was a bad match.
It was bad. It was bad all around. And I don't know if it's possible for the French midfield to be less effective, but with Pogba off, they somehow found a way. Yeah, I don't know.
First 0-0 draw of the tournament.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, actually, that it's the first 0-0 draw. You guys have already used more words than I could have to really describe that match, so kudos to you guys. But we'll go on to the next game.
That's what we get paid to do.
Switzerland 2, Costa Rica 2. Headline in this one, Augie strikes in the 93rd minute in the most creative way yet. Augie's on the board with his 8th goal. 2-2, Switzerland 2, Costa Rica 2.
Yeah, own goal showed up, and this was only the 3rd own goal in World Cup history suffered by a goalie. Isn't that amazing?
That's a great stat.
It's not easy to score an own goal if you're a goalie, it turns out.
It really isn't, as the penalty kick taken bounces off the crossbar and hits the goalie, who has already dived on the ground onto his head and into the goal. I have to be honest with you guys here. I had $5 on Switzerland in this game.
Not happy with the bonk.
Absolutely furious.
I'm surprised. Have you put a bet on the number of own goals that there are going to be total in this tournament yet? Do you have anyone willing to take that bet on with you?
Can you bet on an own goal in a game?
You can bet on an own goal in a game. You absolutely can. You can bet on almost anything in a game. You can bet on an own goal in a game. The odds are usually around 3-1 or so. For these matches, but I really think we're getting to an area where those odds are going to end up being like 2-1. And part of that is because of them calling deflections as goals, like maybe suspect deflections, which we've talked about before. And the other part of that is just there's just some plain fantastic own goals in this tournament. Augie took the all-time lead in World Cup, which previously was 6. He is now at 8. He is going after the World Cup Golden Boot lead in a single tournament, which is pretty impressive, guys, considering that the record is 13 goals in a tournament by Just Fontaine of France. 13 is what Augie is going after here, but it seems pretty clear to me, guys, that he's going to win the Golden Boot.
He's got a shot.
Yeah. He's got a real shot here.
From humble beginnings. It feels like a tournament that Jeff Agus should be playing in. This many own goals.
Jeff Agus, honorary own goal leader. Absolutely. So we'll go through this game real quickly. 31st minute, Desmalley scores for Switzerland, and I'm happy I'm going to win my $5. And then Costa Rica scores Watson for Costa Rica. So this game went back and forth, but there were no real implications of the match. So not really following this one too closely. Dermich scores in the 88th minute for Switzerland. I'm going berserk again. I'm going to win my $5. And then the own goal in the 93rd minute bonks off Jan Sommer's head. 2-2. Costa Rica goes home with one single point. Cinderella run is over, and they are last in the group. Switzerland is through. So let's talk about now the bracket as it stands. We are going to talk about the left side of the bracket real quick. I don't want to get too deep into these matches. We're just going to do it quickly. Guys, Uruguay versus Portugal. James, who's your winner?
It's Uruguay. Portugal's in trouble. Uruguay just has a really solid defense. Portugal has barely anything going for it besides Cristiano Ronaldo. And this is a Portugal that almost got eliminated from the World Cup by Iran.
Yeah, absolutely.
Uruguay, to me, come into this, and if not for the name of Cristiano Ronaldo would be the favorites. I don't know if they actually are odds favorites or not. You want to put money on it?
I think Uruguay was in an easy group. They didn't do enough to impress me. I think they do have a good back line, but they didn't impress me that much. And I think Portugal, although they don't have a great team, I think Ronaldo can win a game on any given night. I just have a feeling that they're going to win it.
Pete, France versus Argentina in the matchup of the group.
Man, this is going to be awesome. And the root of the question is Argentina going to show up or not? I just think that I have no idea how they're going to stop France's front line with Mascherano in there. Like, he is the worst player on the pitch.
With the speed that France has? Yeah, he's... Yeah.
And he's going to be matched up against Griezmann, you know? So, needless to say, I expect France to finally show up.
No, I'm going Argentina.
You little contrarian. Such
a hipster.
Not just because I have Argentina winning in my bracket, as I've said several times.
He says but every episode. Because
this team, this Argentinian team, is now woke. They're ready.
Oh, get out of here.
They are. No. They know what they have to do. They're not listening to their coach anymore. They're listening to their hearts. They're playing with their hearts. They're listening to their guts. Most importantly, they're listening to Messi, and they are going to be victorious against France.
Hey, can I say one thing real quick? You saw Mascherano bleeding from his head during that game, and I was really hoping for the giant gauze wrap around the head. Like... I love when a player's got gauze wrapped all the way around his head and like can't see.
As a fan?
As a fan. Like the gauze is falling over their eyes. There's blood coming through the gauze. Like they're trying to head the ball with the gauze. I mean, it just cracks me up. I love
one of my favorite soccer moments of all time. I saw the U.S. men's national team play a friendly in RFK in Washington, D.C. And Preki of the U.S. national team took an elbow to the head and played the rest of the game, man. Like, almost completely mummified.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they'll wrap their entire head. Like, some of the guys have the most ridiculous hair pieces from their gauze.
It's incredible. A great time. All right, to the next match, James, Brazil versus Mexico. Maybe you guys can get on the same page for this one.
I think probably we will be. It's got to be Brazil, especially with Hector Moreno sitting out this match for Mexico. I think that Brazil have just been too professional. They've got everything going. They're becoming more fluid. We know Mexico can raise their game to the opposition, but I don't think that they're going to be able to maintain focus enough to see off a surging Brazil.
Pete?
Yeah, Brazil all day long. Mexico wins this one. It'll be their greatest victory in their country's history. Yeah.
That's correct. It would be. My picks real quick, since I really didn't give them, I have Uruguay over Portugal simply because I don't think that Portugal can handle Uruguay's, I don't think they can handle their defense, and I think Uruguay is built to get through tournaments.
Stupid pick.
Okay. France versus Argentina. My heart wants Argentina. My head says France. It is France I will pick here.
No.
Brazil-Mexico, 5-0 Brazil here, and I believe that Mexico goes out, history comes through again here. Let's move to the right side of the bracket. So the left side of the bracket has 4 previous World Cup winners, although Uruguay's win was so long ago that I'm not really sure it matters. It was before like the 50s even, so it was a long time ago, but much more prestige on the left side of the bracket. On the right side of the bracket, Spain versus Russia, Dr. Pete.
Yeah, and I would say that the right side has got a bunch of teams that have played the best soccer.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, Croatia's over there, Sweden is over there, Belgium and England are going to be over there. So actually that side might have teams that are playing better soccer overall. So in the Spain-Russia game, I've definitely got Spain going through. You never know with the Russia in front of their home crowd, but it would just be incredible if Spain didn't win this game. And De Gea has to show up at some point, right?
Does he? Does De Gea have to show up? If he was going to show up, wouldn't he have showed up already? But lucky for him, they're playing against Russia, who just are not that great of a team.
Yeah, that's what I think too. I just think Russia's been riding their host bump for a while. I think that without being hosts, they're out in the first round, and maybe without a point. But they've been rolling because of, you know, being in front of their home fans and being comfortable. The only thing I'd like to add to this one is, you know, guys, it's taken David De Gea a really long time to connect his horrible mutton chop sideburns to the center of his face to make a beard. And I think that it is time for him to grow up on the international stage as opposed to just the club stage. And I think he is a guy that can win that game for you. I don't think it'll be necessary in this one, but you never know. I mean, Spain's been doing weird stuff in their back line, allowing a ton of goals. So you never know. Would not shock me if Russia won here. Moving to the next match. The lovely Croatia versus Denmark here. Pete, you can start.
This one's closer than I thought it was going to be in my head. Denmark has been playing very solid soccer. They obviously were playing to a draw in the France game, but I think they're a pretty solid squad. Croatia has been playing faultless soccer, and so I'm going to give them the edge, but I think Denmark could easily win this game. Like, this to me is the most balanced match probably out of all the matches so far.
No, the most balanced one is going to be the next one because they're both very mediocre teams in Sweden and Switzerland. But I agree that Croatia and Denmark is going to be a good game. And I echo your sentiment there where I didn't think Denmark would be putting up as much of a fight as they are. I think Christian Eriksen has the ability to turn a game.
Mm-hmm. He's a match winner.
But I don't think he has the supporting cast to deal with Croatia. Croatia has their own match for Eriksen in Modric and a better supporting team, better rest of the team than Denmark has ever had. And when we're talking about elimination rounds and tournaments, I just think Croatia has way too much for Denmark.
I will say I think it'll be Croatia, but even with them as my pick, I could see Denmark sneaking one away here. I'm not going to sit on the fence. I think it'll be Croatia, but I think I could see Denmark sneaking through. The next match, Sweden versus Switzerland. Good luck with this one. James, you've already made your point, but not make a pick.
I'm going to pick Switzerland, even though they're the most boring, bland national team to ever exist.
I thought maybe that was like an alphabetic pick because you couldn't really have a tiebreaker there. You're just going with the SU instead of the SW there, maybe. No?
Nope. Yeah.
Pete?
I'm going to go with Switzerland too. I think that they've been really good at grinding out results. I don't think they've lost in 24 or 25 games. And they've got a couple guys who could win the match. And I just think Sweden has been playing over their heads. And now that there's going to be some serious pressure on them, I think they're going to wilt under the pressure.
Now is when they would need Zlatan more than ever.
Yeah, if they go down by a goal, for sure. I'm going to pick Sweden. They're so closely matched. I'm just being contrarian here. I just want to get an edge on you guys and take Sweden here. If you ask me to put money on the game, I honestly probably couldn't. I will, but I probably couldn't.
I will because I'm a degenerate gambler, but well, I shouldn't be.
No, I probably won't put anything on this one. Maybe I will. So we'll move to the last of the knockout stage games, which will be on Japan versus Poland, Senegal versus Colombia, Panama versus Tunisia, yay, and England, Belgium. Guys, I really only want to talk about two matches here really quickly. England, Belgium. Dr. Pete, what does it mean to you?
I think it's really interesting that there is some strategy in whether or not you're going to finish first or second in this group based on which side of the bracket you want to go into.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, it seems like Belgium's coach Martinez is sort of playing as if he puts out an inferior squad and ends up in second place, that they could end up on different side of the bracket and play lesser opponents by coming in second place.
You absolutely want to finish second in this group.
Yeah, but that's always dangerous. I mean, you always see, okay, hey, we finished in second, great, and then you get smacked in the first game out of there because you know, there is a certain amount of momentum you're carrying, and if you destroy England 3-0, you can carry that into the next match. But Lukaku's not playing in this one. He's been ruled out, which is huge, and so I don't expect Belgium to win this one, and the The best part about this game to me is that if it comes down to a draw, the separation is going to be yellow cards or red card. So if a team is trying to actively come in second, oh, the end of this game could be so fun.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I didn't think about that. Could just be dudes kicking dudes for no
gladiatorial
reason.
Gladiatorial combat.
You could see Jamie Vardy come in just to get the red.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get the red.
Sub in third string keeper.
Yeah, to go.
Put him in the midfield.
Yeah.
Go in studs high. Sure. Flick the ref's ear or something like that. Absolutely.
Red card's worth 2 negative points, man.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
That's a big one. That's a biggie. Yeah, I'm excited about this one, and I'm a little worried that England might try too hard in this one and kind of use up the last of their energy. And Belgium's approach, I think, might be actually a little bit better than England's approach here. England would just be happy if they got 9 points, they'd celebrate it forever, and they'd probably think it was a successful World Cup. But you know, Roberto Martinez knows that finishing second is not a problem. You know, you get on the right half of that bracket and you got more of a chance here. I think he knows that, and he's playing everything down. He's saying he's going to rotate, and I'm worried England's just going to be like, all right, we got a 3-0 win, woohoo. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're playing against Colombia or whoever, and then after that you play Brazil. Like, it's interesting to me, that part of it. I think, Pete, you know, talking about strategy going into this, at the end of the match could be really interesting to see who actually doesn't want to win. But I think Harry Kane wants the golden boot, and though he will lose to Augie in the long run, he could end up winning as he's on 5 goals. The only other game that is of note to me is Senegal-Colombia. Good luck picking here, guys. What do you have here, James?
I actually, and this is a little bit, this is, you know me, I bet with my heart rather than my head.
Yeah.
I want Senegal to go through. I've loved watching them as a team. I like the way they play. They play with heart, just like I play with heart. Okay. I would love to see them go in the next round, especially after, you know, Colombia messing around in the first match. I just think Senegal have fought for it and they deserve it. So I'm pulling for Senegal here. And I think they're not going to eke out a victory. They're going to win 2-0.
Okay. Pete?
Yeah, I like Senegal in this one too. Japan seems to have that Midas touch in this tournament, where they get the goals when they need them, and their strategy has been terrific. They've gotten results when they've needed to at the end of games. So this is going to be a fun double game to watch in this one. And Poland, I don't think, is going to go out without a fight. They're going to be pissed off. They've got a negative 4 goal differential, and they've got nothing to lose, which can be very dangerous. And, you know, Poland may be Vegas favorite in this one, actually. I haven't looked, but I bet they are.
I haven't seen anything from Poland, though. They've not shown anything. If they fought, it's been completely impotent.
Yeah, but sometimes you see that team go in the last game and say, okay, we got nothing to lose. Let's just show something, anything. And
I don't know if the Polish have that.
Grind out a result.
Yeah, so the group as it sits right now, Japan is on top of the group with 4 points. Senegal has 4 points. And Colombia has 3 points. And, you know, if Japan can win, they win the group. I think, you know, like you guys said, that it's going to be tough for them. They are, wow, it is really tight on whether or not they're favorites. It's really tight between Japan and Poland.
What's crazy about this group is that it is exactly upside down from, I think, how most people saw this group finishing.
Yeah, right now.
Yeah. Sure. You've got Japan. And we talked about this before, but none of us saw Japan doing anything.
No, nothing, nothing.
And they've really surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm pulling for them now. I want them to go through. I want them to finish top of the group.
Well, they are very slight. I mean, it's almost even here in the match for Japan, but they could win. I mean, they've played well enough. They have enough goals, and they've shown a lot of character in this one, especially having fired their manager in April. The Senegal-Colombia match. Senegal here is actually 3-1 dogs in this one. They're underdogs to Colombia, so that tells you where the bookies stand on it, and that's a big deal. I think Colombia rolls through Senegal, and I think that Japan gets a point off Poland. Anything you guys want to add to the group stage besides that? This has probably been the greatest group stage I have ever seen in a World Cup.
Oh, the drama, the unpredictability. I mean, absolutely terrific World Cup, especially, you know, if you're going to pick one World Cup where your team is not going to be there.
Yeah.
This is the one. And real quick, fun fact for you guys. Jesus Gallardo from Mexico, quickest booking in World Cup history. Yep. 15 seconds. I think that's terrible.
You're going out to send a message there.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know what that message was. But I'm sure he sent it.
I don't mind getting a yellow card.
Yeah. All right. We believe you. Yeah. We're okay.
All right. James, anything you want to add to an awesome group stage as it ends?
This has been amazing. The ups and downs. Rooting for Argentina, then becoming completely devoid of hope, and then having it all come back in one glorious moment. Never thought I'd cheer a goal by a Man United player.
And none of that has anything to do with the fact that he has him in their bracket.
None of that has anything to do with the fact that I have Argentina winning the World Cup in my bracket. No, it's there's been a lot of amazing moments. I think I want to mention, because I don't think we've called it out before, but the South Korean goalie had an amazing group stage. And I know they went out not last in the group. That's Germany. Mm-hmm. But They allowed three goals, and I think they may have only let in one from open play, mm-hmm. in a group of Sweden, Mexico, and Germany. I don't think anybody saw it coming in, and the South Korean keeper in the Germany game made some fantastic saves to complete the humiliation of the German national team. So I want to give him a big shout out. Big shout out to my Korean goalkeeper, my favorite Korean goalkeeper of all time, Cho Hyun-woo. Man of the match versus Germany.
Fair enough. He did have an awesome match. Looked really good there. So the group stages are almost over. They end tomorrow. Tunisia also plays Panama. And then we move into the knockout stages, which are amazing no matter what. But the drama provided by the group stages is so rare. You didn't see the big teams rolling through the groups like you thought they would. You had Germany losing, you had Brazil on the ropes, you had Argentina on the ropes, you had Spain on the ropes. So many awesome matches defined by last minute goals, by penalty kicks, by handballs, so few by red cards and poor tackles that limited teams in their games. I mean, so many of these matches were decided on the field, which was fantastic to me. I think that a lot of penalty kicks were called by VAR that maybe in the past would have been missed, and I think that VAR actually brought more to the game than it took away. I'm sad about the own goals. I think that there were too many called, or too many ruled as own goals, but at the same time, it adds a different dramatic element to the group stages, and I think we will remember the group stages in Russia for a lot of things beyond VAR, which is a real testament to the soccer being played. So for Dr. Pete and James Lewis, I am Tom Miller saying I hope everybody has an awesome week.